So the rabbi mentioned it in the shir this morning. Vayeshev Yaakov Eres Megureyo, Eres Canaan. Yaakov was living in the land where Yitzchak traveled. And, right?
David Slamaki.
Rashi tells us, when Yaakov then wanted to live in tranquility, in other words, he was 99 years old, right? And he had already suffered, Lavan, the incidents with Dina, losing Rachel, and everything else, Yosef's issue with his brothers arose. And Rashi says that tzaddikim would like to live in peace, but Hashem says, isn't it enough that you're going to have an amazing schar, an olam haba, an amazing future world? Well, why do you request tranquility in this world? Oh, but so we see that for whatever reason, Yaakov now gets burdened with the problem of Yosef, and the rabbi says, and he realized full well that his other brothers, the 10 other brothers, had been the cause of it. Was wrong with Yaakov wanting to now have shalom, some peace. And he says, Rav Moshe says, chinuch never ends. In his Sefer Drash Moshe, he says, Yaakov thought that he was through, that he didn't have to worry about educating his children. His children were all grown up, and they were living the way. He had been zocha to have the 12 leaders of the 12 tribes. Yishmael and Esav were no longer challenging him. And he seemed to have a feeling of contentment. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow wanted to remind him that even in this, someone knocking in the background. That even at this stage of the game, he still had to somehow show effort in setting examples in teaching. He says, the responsibility to teach never ends, and somehow Yaakov was going to be spurred on to greater efforts in this case. Of Nissen Elpert, in his Sefer Limudei Nissan, says, as long as there is any internal strife among members of Klal Yisrael, there isn't shalom in the world. Until there is shalom bayis within all of Yisrael, there's no time to sit back and relax. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can protect us from external enemies and can give us tranquility and respite from them. But amongst Inzera, amongst ourselves, right, that's up to us. We've got to take the actions necessary to foster peace. However, maybe Yaakov didn't realize the degree of schism within his family, how much the brothers really hated Yosef, and that required effort. That's what Hashem was spurring him on to. Rav Schwab, in his Mayan Beit Shoei Hashoova, I think it's called, says, right? He says, Avram accepted he had responsibility in the world at all times. He realized that as long as there was breath in his, right, ability to breathe, his avoda was to continue teaching the world about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was his whole essence, and he continued. We're told that Yitzchak followed in the footsteps of Avram in his own way, without going out to the same extent. He spread the concept of one God, and then the mantle fell to Yaakov. Right? Their job was to let the world realize who is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At this stage of the game, Rav Schwab says, Yaakov wanted to basically, as they say, take a step back and work on himself. He wanted to elevate his own level of spirituality. However, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, that's an amazing thing to want to do, but you can never walk away from the others that you're required to influence. Right? And while Yaakov was correct in trying to first influence himself, then his family, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, in effect, Yaakov, you're greater than that. You have got to be a leader of the entire world. You have a public role. You're not ready for retirement. You're still required to shine a light for all the nations to follow. And what happens is HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a situation that Yaakov has got to go to Egypt, where he, in effect, begins to raise the entire nation. He now has to be involved in a wide family and in community-type activities. I don't know when the transition from family to community seemed to occur, but it seems to be it happened while he was in Mitzrayim. And Rav Schwab turns around and he says, there is no right for anyone to say Gedid. He says, as long as we have Kayach, we've got to remain involved with the tzibur, with the community. In Shul, we've got to continue to support the yeshivas, yeshiva katanas, the bigger ones, the chesed organizations, Hatzola, etc. He says, the only way that Klal Yisroel will ever attain perfect harmony, perfect peace, is when everyone makes an effort to be involved. And that's the lesson that Yaakov was being taught, and the legacy for his children. Rav Nissen Alpert says that Yaakov wanted Yosef to be the fourth of the Avos. And he wanted to make Yosef HaTzadik that individual while Yaakov was alive. Yaakov wanted it to be clear that unlike the competition, Yitzchak, Yishmael, Esav, Yaakov, there would be no competition amongst his family. He felt that Yosef would be the best leader for the family and therefore the nation. And he thought this was what was needed. And this was the way Yaakov felt that tranquility and peace would arise because they would have a clear line of authority. If Yosef would have been an Av, Rabbi Elpert asks, what would his special Mida be? He said, we had Chesed Avram, Gvura, right? Self-introspection, greatness in Yitzchak, and Emet and Yaakov. What would Yosef's attribute have been? Now see, Rabbi Elpert said he would have been Malchut, HaMalchut, the leadership of Klal Yisroel.
Right.
Up until this point, there was no need for let's call it a monarch. There wasn't that big a family, etc. But Yaakov Avinu knew that his 12 sons were going to generate an entire nation. And Yaakov felt that on that level of humanity, on that many people, we needed a leader. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, wonderful concept, but I disagree. That's what my Alpert says. He says, I don't want a force of. I don't want a force person in the realm of Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov. And therefore, whatever happened transpired. So we know we're in Bereishis that Yosef has his two dreams. He tells his brothers, and it says after the second dream by Yikanu boy Achav, his brothers envied him. The Aviv Shamar as Hadavar. But Yaakov, his father, awaited the matter. When he describes his first dream to his parents, his first dream to his brothers, their reaction, the brothers, was hatred. But after the second dream, it says, they became envious, jealous. The Beis HaLevi explains why the change in wording. He said, the focus of the first dream was in relation to physical wealth and success in this world. Yosef would be blessed with supporting not only his brothers and their families, but the entire region he would live in. The second dream was a spiritual matter. Based on the content, his reactions are different. When it comes to wealth and riches, the brothers were not jealous. That wasn't their prime interest. If someone is rich, right, you're born with a golden spoon, it doesn't say a word about who you are, what drives you, right? Property, as I think of my Feigenbaum, a great educator, says, is stuff. Stuff will always be external from us, and woe to the person who tries to define himself in terms of having lots of stuff. He says, maybe being human, it rubbed off on them that Yosef would be richer than anyone else, right? And maybe human emotion, and then it brought resentment, but not true jealousness, because their essence was a spiritual essence. You know? But when it came to the notion of a spiritual leadership, of Yosef being the leader in Torah and in Avodah, they realized that someone who rises to the top in these areas is inherently greater. That they're a greater person. And that caused them a level of jealousy. They realize that the Gemara in Baba Basra says that someone who is deeper in Torah and Mitzvahs is inherently different and greater. And the Gemara says, although it doesn't may not always happen, that Kina Seferin Tarbet Chachma. If I am jealous of your level of Torah, right, that will lead to an increase in wisdom because it should spur the person who feels less to work to accomplish more. He says the brothers wanted to be spiritual masters. They wanted, right, to get to the ultimate degree they could. And presumably they felt that being all 12 sons of Yaakov, they could all reach to the same level. Right? However, when Yosef showed that he would be greater in that level, that caused significant problems. He quotes the Balei Musar. This is Rabbi Rock. He says, the Balei Musar say that when it comes to spirituality, we should look for models of greater people and try to attain the level that they have reached. However, when it comes to stuff, when it comes to physical possessions, etc., he says, if we want to admire people, we should admire people who do much with less. Those who are happy with what they have and aren't out to compete and to acquire that much. That, he says, is a proper perspective. To want to be as great as we can in serving Hashem, in learning, in developing the level of our Torah and Mitzvot, but not to worry about bigger Lexus, etc. The question is always asked, who sold Yosef, right? It says, when Yosef came, they stripped him of his shirt and his woolen coat, which Yaakov made. They took him and threw him into the pit. The pit was empty with no water in it, but it did have snakes, Rashi tells us. And they sat down to eat a meal. They lifted their eyes, and they saw a caravan of Yishmaelim was coming from Gilad, with their camels carrying spices, balm, and lotus, taking it down to Egypt. Yehuda says to his brothers, what are we going to gain if we physically kill him and cover up his blood? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelim, but our hands won't be on him. because he's a brother of our flesh. The brothers listened. Then it says, Ed Binyanim men, merchants, came by, and they pulled Yosef from the pit, and they were the ones who sold Yosef to the Ishmaelim for 25 silver pieces. The brothers throw Yosef into the pit, and they have a suda. Then they see Arab merchants passing by, and Yehuda convinces his brothers, we're going to sell him into captivity. We're not going to be murderers. And that, he says, infers that they were actively involved. But the psukim tell us that their actions were superseded by Midianite merchants who actually do this. The Rashbam says, so who in fact sold Yosef to the Ishmaelim? And he says, what is an obvious question is often overlooked. He says, people can read the same psukim for years and never stop, look at the actual context, and try to see what the Torah really says. The Rashbam tells us that they did not, in fact, sell Yosef. It was a Midianim. Right? But then it says, somehow, later on, they pulled him up and sold him. Who was that they? It doesn't say who they are in that case. The Rashbam says, obviously, if you read it carefully, you should come to the conclusion that it was the Midianim who took Yosef out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelim, who sold him to Paran, to Egypt. And the Rashbam says, I'll tell you why this even makes more sense. Al tamoid al dam re'echa. You're not allowed to stay by the blood of your friend. And it says, you can't, al toichal al the blood, al adam. You can't eat near blood, which generally is talking about a korban, but it means, right, you stay away somehow. You don't eat in a place that's known for blood, you know, things like that. So obviously, once they threw him into the pit, the brother would move away, right?
They're not necessarily dying right then and there.
No, he's not dying then and there, but they may have known that the pit had snakes.
Yeah,
right.
Then they say, told you know, the bed, and it could be hours.
Yeah, but in any event, they weren't going to eat, I guess. It would also, you know, if you want to be cynical, you could say, we don't want to hear screaming while we're having a steak. You know, steak and wine is good without noise. Right? So, they may have
but
said,
Gary,
okay, we're going to finish our
but Gary?
What?
Doesn't it say in Dudley Davin, in Yom Kippur, that they sold them for 20 coins or shoes or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Very difficult. I know, right? That's what it says. I know. Right? But it would seem, right, from the Rashbam, that they weren't the direct vendors of him. And if we stick to the text, right, and we look at it in its purity, right, it would seem that they were not the direct sellers. Now, the Torah may well describe the selling of Yosef to them, because A, that was their intention, right? They put the wheels in motion, and if somebody hadn't come in the interim, right, and basically pulled him out and done it first, they would have done it. I mean, we're not, you know, we know that only Reuven was the one who had an idea to save him and get him out, not the others.
Well, Yehuda had the idea of to save his life.
Right. Yehuda was the one, well, no, but Yehuda wanted to sell him into slavery. It was only Reuven who said, who acquiesced, because he figured he could later go and get him and take him out, which didn't happen.
He wasn't there. He left.
Right, exactly. But he intended, right? There are many, many difficulties in reading the story, right? Like, what, you know, that's another shear. I know, I think Rabbi Golden gives a shear. Where was Reuven, right? Why did he think he could get him out when maybe he couldn't? I mean, it's all fraught with difficulty, right? And, but I know, right? We say on Yom Kippur, we fault the brothers for Yosef's sale, and we always mention that. So they clearly were not absolved from blame in what happened. Yeah. You know, they put the wheels in motion, if nothing else. Okay.